Hello and welcome to Keyframe as part of the Geek Show podcast. As always, we've got our fun selection of anime, animation, cartoons, and anything else we've managed to drag up out of the earth. With me today is Rob.
Hello.
Tucky.
Hi.
And myself, Mark.
I love that expression that we've dragged about the earth like we're mining weebs.
Well, we've dragged up quite a bit this week, haven't we?
I found a rich vein of weeb.
Yeah, we've been striking weebs out in these parts for years.
Next thing you know, we're going to be panning for weebs.
There's sounds weebs like in a their mountains.
Oh, it's a weebrush. Oh, this just keeps going.
Oh God!
So where do we start?
No, because can you imagine if you replaced gold with weeb for literally everything? So, you know, merchant bank would be called Weebman Sachs.
Oh God!
Sounds like an unwashed scrotum.
Exactly. That Goldsmiths University would be Weebsmiths University.
James Bond would have a movie called Weebfinger.
Oh, my word. Oh, Lordy.
Oh, we're even 2 minutes into the broadcast and we've already managed to kill ourselves.
Oh. I think Tucky takes the prize. You can do the, anyone can do the Austin Powers reference now, but Tucky wins it with that one. Have you almost killed yourself there, Tucky?
Oh, I've already got like congested chest coughs all week. So. it's just agitating.
Oh, anyway, today we're going to be talking about. Obviously, aside from Chucky, Tucky having...
You just called him Chucky.
Yes. I've lost words. Weebfinger did me in. Oh, between Weebfinger and Nightwing's butt. Yeah, seriously, because I recorded 4Panel literally just before this, and Kotobuki has got like these new Ikemen DC characters, and their first figure is Nightwing, and they've really paid attention to Nightwing's butt. So between Nightwing's butt and Weebfinger, I'm done for the evening. So, today we're basically going to be talking mostly about the end of the season with anime, and we've got a couple of treats for you later on. Well, one treat and one rant. So yeah, look forward to it. But
when you say treat, it's a 4 foot Toblerone we've got for you. A gigantic 4 foot Toblerone.
Oh God, no! Why couldn't it be one of those little chocolate mints that you just have on the bedside table?
Wouldn't have been more dramatic with him carrying like an after eight box.
Right. Anyway, it's the end of the season, so hits and misses. Let's start off with misses. What have been your misses of the season? And my girlfriend is a gal is an obvious one, so you're not allowed to refer to that.
Oh come on! I have so much. I sat through like 10 episodes of that and I deserve my opinion to be aired.
But we know your opinion.
It's terrible. They actually use a full-on, straight-up, legit paedophile as a comic device. I have never seen that before. So kudos to them for, like, you know, being new and adventurous. But it's a paedophile. You do not use a paedophile in any form whatsoever. He's a lollicon. No, he has a map where all the little kids live in his local neighbourhood.
Oh, that's...
They put him as work experience in a nursery.
God, no.
Quote, if I was to show you my love, I would get arrested.
Oh, my God.
I mean, screw the storyline. You know, some virgin whore thing going on, and he ends up standing up for her at the end, and everybody has a happy ending, and yes, in that way. But, you know, it's absolute garbage. And I said this from the start, that would be absolute garbage, but... They used a full-on, fully-fledged pedo as a comic device. It's stunning and amazing, but this is the kind of thing that puts the West off watching anime. It's detrimental to everything.
Hang on. It puts the West off, but what's the betting it's going to get a release in the West? on like a 15 rating.
It should not. It should not get. It shouldn't see light of day. They should take the can or the film or whatever they use it on, like, you know, the main disc, bury it in the desert somewhere or fling it into the river like they did with Jumanji and just forget about it. Find it later on and Robin Williams gets trapped in it.
How can Robin Williams get trapped in My Girlfriend is a Girl?
I don't know. He gets trapped in a lot of things.
I don't know. If the story is to be believed, lots of things can get trapped in His Girlfriend. Anyway, moving on.
It's one of those series that, apart from what I've gathered, half of that series, it was only 10 episodes, and half of it was anime original as well. So they only had half a season's worth of content, so why were they rushing this thing out anyway?
Because they realised...
It was good with the big titty fans, but that was it.
Yeah, they basically decided to do it probably for merchandising purposes, thinking, oh, right, we can basically capitalise on some merchandise... Because there are characters that are gal-like in other shows. So, yeah, let's capitalize on some merchandising opportunities by promoting this character type. And by promoting that particular character type, then you can sell figures from, like, Shokugeki no Soma and various things like that. You see?
Yeah, but it's just harem trash, really.
It's harem trash. Anyway, what are the misses, then?
I don't know. I haven't really watched a lot from this season. Simply because I've pretty much got through one episode of most things and decided nearly all of the season was a miss. So I'm going to be leaning on you guys for the misses, because I've got a few.
Well, I've got Free Peace, which I started watching. I got like 3 episodes in and I gave up because, like I said in my original thing, it's just 3 like really, really young girls who somehow managed to find some vintage instruments in a church basement. And they manage to get some random stranger off the internet who does nightcore videos or whatever to help them write music. And the vicar's like, please tell them to quit. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I'm out. It was like a crap version of Keon, really.
Yeah, crap Keon is not very good. One of my misses for this season, and I know it's like only halfway, but Welcome to the Ballroom.
Oh, yeah, that was... I got 2 episodes into that, and that was just... See, I like the manga of that. It was fun enough, but the, I don't know, the anime just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah. One where me and Mark are probably going to differ on our opinion. Aho Girl. I hate it.
This was one I was going to put down as more of a mixed one. I enjoyed it. However, I did read the manga afterwards, and I felt the manga flowed a lot better. It was a lot more better structured. But my issue with Aho Girl, aside from one episode towards the end, is that they just used the same jokes over and over and over and over again. And while it started off pretty amusing, it just...
Yeah.
Towards the end, it was just kind of like, yeah, I've seen this joke like all the way through the season. What's new?
Yeah.
I mean, I must admit, they did have one good episode towards the end, where she's beating up all the bullies with bananas. That was pretty amusing, but... the flashback one was pretty fun, but overall it was kind of like, it was funny enough, but it just wasn't funny enough for a full season.
Yeah. Another one that I suppose I'd give it more of a mixed than an outright bad now. Knights and Magic, which should have been one of the anime of the season. And they have literally in, how many episodes? 13 episodes, yeah? In 13 episodes... They've effectively condensed 5 novels worth of story into 13 episodes. And I'm not talking about a simple novel. I'm talking about something that has very good world building, actual cultural differences between countries, a lot of world history that you have to wade through and become familiar with. There's loads of politics going on, and that's even before you come to the structure of the knights and development of the knights, which takes a while.
It does seem quite rushed in that sense. There's a lot to take in. A lot of things that they just touch on, but you know for a fact that there's a lot more behind it.
Yeah.
Like when Ernest meets like the elves and that and finds out about how to build an engine.
Yeah, he's not going to pick that up straight away.
Pushed through.
Yeah, it was literally forced through in like half an episode. That's nowhere near enough time. He has to, in the novel, I think he spends a couple of months with the elves.
say that. All we get to see is, oh, well, you know, you're worthy of our technology. Can we learn it 5 minutes later and say, oh, and after a couple of months, he's learned it and he's buggered off back to the, through his scrapyard.
Yeah. And the war that goes on later on in the series, right? That takes more than like a week.
Well, it's the thing is, it's good if you haven't read the novel, but
yeah,
for those with a keener eye, you can actually see that. Well, they could have put more detail in here, more detail in here, and before you know it, you're picking up. It's like they've took bullet points from everything and just crammed it all together.
Well, that's literally instead how I view it. I see Knights and Magic as bullet point the anime.
They could have done the bit, but I mean, the animation's good. The opening sequence, they actually, strangely enough, when the opening song's on, they use the sound effects.
Yeah,
like actually from that, I've never known an animator really do that.
There've been a couple.
If it is,
there've been a couple in the past. Not that many. It's not a common thing, and I applaud them for doing that. But it's I think the biggest miss of the summer season though is. Nanamaru Senbatsu, 703X.
Oh, did watch it.
Fastest finger first?
I wouldn't really... that's a mixed bag for me. First of all, I'd say like Boruto's still in their boat.
Yeah, I didn't watch
taking Bort. Over to the grave.
Yeah, I don't watch Bort.
Yeah, well, I do, unfortunately. And I don't know, they don't like a field trip to the hidden rain village. Who gives a toss? Fastest finger first, though. Was interesting. They didn't do what I expected them to do, which was add like more elements, like more of a like daytime TV showish kind of element to it. They stuck with the fastest finger first element, a cross-dressing schoolboy character who's over the top. I don't know. Like I say, it's mixed because it's not terrible, but it's not good at the same time.
Yeah.
So I mean, the story, the plot is like. Oh, he's lost, so he wants to get revenge. You think he'll get revenge in the next quiz meet or quiz ball or whatever they call it, and he doesn't. It's like, oh, so so this is going to be a long, long ass development of this guy to get all the way at the number one. And it's like, oh, he's showing a bit of potential here, but he's still losing. It's like an anime following like one of the mediocre pub teams. That's all it is. In fact, the mediocre pub teams are probably be better because you've got alcohol there. I'm hoping they'll take that idea on board.
Yeah. One last one that I want to mention. I don't know if you guys watched it, The Reflection.
No.
Nope.
Very stylized, had some great ideas, but unfortunately execution is everything with this, and it wasn't well executed. I had much higher hopes, especially after Stan Lee, you know, worked on Hero Man and did such a good job with that. I thought, you know, it could be something special. Unfortunately,
they can't all be winners.
No, they can't all be winners. I mean, it's got some great ideas in The Reflection, but it's more like just a collection of Stanley's favourite characters from his life, animated, or given the anime treatment. Very stylized anime treatment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, and nobody's mentioned Dive.
Nobody needs to mention Dive.
Yeah.
We don't speak of that.
I said enough about Dive the first time I watched it, and my opinion did not change.
What about that Centaur one? Did anyone go back and watch that?
Which one?
The Centaur one.
No, my life as a Centaur.
Again, I don't know why this season has been very hard for me to actually sit down and watch anything on streaming, but it's one I probably will go back to eventually. I probably will watch a little bit more of it, but nothing was really enticing us back.
Yeah. Oh, one other mixed one. I totally forgot about this one. In Another World with My Smartphone.
Again? So it's like Centaur's Life. It was like one where I'll probably enjoy it and if I sit down and watch it. But again, nothing from the first few episodes enticed us back.
Yeah, it's kind of bland. It's kind of dull. And I was amazed at just how dull it is. Because when you read the novels, right, the novels are a lot more interesting because they've got a certain pacing. Right. But when you take that pacing out and you basically throw in a narrator and you cut the crap out of the story, like they did with Knights of Magic, because they did exactly the same thing to in Another World with My Smartphone, they basically cut it to pieces, put in a narrator and basically said, right, so you have this really disjointed and really quite dull storyline about a guy who is in another world with his smartphone. It's kind of Ron Seal anime. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And that's all you can say about it.
Pretty much.
I'll say with my finish for like the mediocre ones, New Game, the second season of that, that was kind of like... The thing is, I enjoyed the first season.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like I enjoyed. It was just like, that's all right to put on while I'm working and whatnot, and I can catch little things here and there. And, you know, and the second season's pretty much followed the same form. There's nothing new to it. It's just a continual string of, well, this is happening, you know, try and feel some warmth for the characters. You'll not, but, you're still watching for some reason.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the basic premise is, oh, they've finished the fairies one, which was her dream. Now what does she do after her dream? Oh, she submits to art, the make a new game about, I don't know, some last that, like, tears bears apart and makes them into Kirigumis and tries to blend in, and there's some big villain or so. You know, I mean, I'm, like I say, it's just background noise for me now. But I'm still watching it, so
yeah,
don't know why. There's that, and I also decided to give Honda-kun a try. I know it wasn't in the season.
Yeah.
But after watching Barakamon and this being like the prequel, I decided, well, you know, go on then. And it's a lot different, isn't it?
Yep.
It's a whole different anime to Barakamon. Like, have you seen it, Rob?
Yeah, I've seen Honda-kun.
It continues the form along the gag anime, and basically it's his school life, and he's seen as this like dark outsider where he's got like a barrier around him. And everybody finds that kind of cool. But to him, he thinks everybody's going to be like bullying him and picking on him and stalking him and whatnot. When really they're all like, oh, we're his crew. And they don't really talk to him.
Yeah.
And there's lots of misunderstandings. And he's kind of got all of the school as his harem.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know it.
Yeah, it is.
He's oblivious to everything.
See, I like Handikun, but I don't know. Did you ever read or watch Maison Ikkoku?
I didn't.
See, I wrote a review for Maison Ikkoku years ago, and I had to start it with one particular line. And it's a line from Cool Hand Luke, if I remember. You know that line where they're working outside the jail, and you got the prison warden going, "What we have here is failure to communicate."
Yeah.
And that's literally what I think of Maison Ikkoku and of Handikun.
Yeah. It tries to be meta from the start. It tries to be very self-aware, yeah. But... There's like little bits in like where he's getting his palm read, and it's like, oh, he's going to be where he's got his future holds seven children. And that, it's like, see what you're doing. But apart from that, there's no connection. There's no like struggle of him actually learning his calligraphy.
Yeah.
As such.
Thing is, it would have been nice to see him actually learning calligraphy during that time, because that's the time when he would have learned it.
Yeah. And a lot more from his father as well.
Yeah.
Cause they make reference to his father being this huge, like famous calligrapher. But with him, he's just saying, I mean, even the teachers like in admiration of him. And I don't know how he got anything done in school with him being stalked constantly.
Screw his dad. His mom. Like, his mom. We need more of his mom. His psycho.
That was fantastic. I mean, his ma is an absolute treasure to the show. Even in the Honda-kun one.
Yeah.
And that where they mistake her for his like cougarish girlfriend.
Yes.
And then everybody falls out with him because he's no longer available. That's quite funny. I mean, it does have funny parts, but like I say, when you got Barakamon, and it's kind of it's our rate, but it's kind of
no Barakamon
first.
Yeah, it's no Barakamon. Okay, so your hits for summer.
I don't want to say it's a hit. See, there's only one series I had that was I felt was a hit, and everything else was kind of like middle of the road. And I'm going to point out as a middle of the road one for me was Gamers.
Okay.
And this was one I really enjoyed the first few episodes of, because it actually felt it was about the games, and it was all about, oh yeah, be yourself and stuff like that. And then after that, it just went on for another like 10 episodes where it's just this whole
high school romance.
Yeah, that's all it was about. And I was just kind of like, yeah, when they're getting back to the games, I'm came here for the, it's called Gamers. It's not High School Romance Club or whatever it is. It's just,
yeah. The thing is, it started strong. And it was this whole, when they got into this mix-up of like, oh, he likes Tendo. Tendo supposedly likes Fingria. Mochi likes this guy and that guy. And they all think they're cheating on each other. And then you stick in the lonely girl and her sister who likes like erotic games. And the thing is that the main center of it was, the thing that got me was, it focused on the games, and it wasn't just computer games, console games. It was also like arcade games, like claw games and whatnot. Yeah, and I love that kind of diversity. And when he's like, do you want to join the club? And he's like, well, no, because that's not why I play games, to be competitive. And I love that. That caught my attention straight away. And then it just trailed off into some kind of like farcical school romance comedy.
Yeah. And that was literally my exact issues with that series. And it was just like, yeah, I understand they can't have the games all the time. It wouldn't make a good series just to have it about the games. But then there was like, but this has like been 90% of them just sitting there chatting, seeing who's going to get with who and who isn't going to get with who. And it was just like, by the end, I just didn't care.
Yeah, so basically, they used the first couple of episodes about games to hook you in. Then it turned into a Commodore Garden romantic comedy set in a school.
Well, I've watched the last episode that's just been released like a few minutes ago. I watched it and they start this whole like proper philosophical conversation about are games worth like the price tag that they are today? And they went to an in-depth discussion about downloadable content. And they've got the one girl in it who's not really a big gamer, who's like, oh, well, games are just crap. They're just trying to fleece you on that. And then they start going into different examples of like, oh, would you buy DLC for your husband or your boyfriend? If he like bought you a ring, would you equip it and get like +4 affection? And like, you know, it's simplistic, like things like that, but it's an interesting conversation. All episodes, them as gamers trying to convince her that buying like downloadable content, extra things for your avatar, that in this day and age, it's worth the money. And being a gamer isn't so much like, oh, you do it for this, that, and the other. It's more of, it's just wastefulness for sheer fun.
Thing is, Tucky, I mean, I'm still of the opinion that if you're going to pay for something, actually have something physical that you can hold and touch. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still very much of that opinion. So, well, a lot of DLC bypasses me completely. But one episode where they actually get philosophical isn't enough to basically make the series great.
Oh, it's not. By far, it's not. It's like I say, first three episodes and then this last one kind of got me back into it. But the whole high school romance has been done to death.
Yeah.
It has been. I mean, there's a few like off-brand games. There's a few on-brand games in there as well. But overall, it's just like, meh. This is just like every other cookie cutter high school romance thing. And they've tried to squeeze games in it. But the thing is, with the games industry being as big as it is, you would have thought they would have had more like big names who would have joined in on it.
No, and said,
well, you know, it's a competitive gaming club. Let's actually have them playing Heroes of the Storm or something like that.
Now, what you got to think about is
multiplayer for Overwatch.
The thing is, what you got to think about is turnover. They have a limited amount of time to get this out, and negotiating with video game companies that to basically add their games or use their name in your particular series. That's a big, complicated process because they're going to ask for royalties. They're going to ask for this much fee. They're going to ask for whatever.
Well, it wouldn't hurt them to take a step back and say, right, well, who would like free promotion through anime?
We could stick their name in and whatnot.
And, you know, if they took like another year to actually develop this and subtract some of like the whole high school
romance thing into it. It's not that simple. Having worked in advertising, trust me, it's not as simple as that, because what they would have to do before the episode could air, they would have to send the entire episode to these companies and say, is this okay? Because if they misrepresent the companies or their products in any way, they can get their asses sued big time.
Well, they got Persona 4 in there.
Yeah, they got Persona 4 in there, but what Persona 4 is like, it's made by a Japanese company, and they're probably just across the street. So they could literally nip across with the episode and say, this is what we've done with Persona 4. Are you okay with it? And then go, get the green light, and then the episode can go out. But doing that with Blizzard or someone like that is a different matter.
Well, it's something to think on for them, because I dare say there will be a second season. What direction they take it in, God knows.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if the thing is, like, say they started and there's a lot of crossover with anime fans and gaming fans. I mean, like we've seen the past weekend, and it's a shame that there isn't one that could encapsulate both kind of hobbies and really bring it to the front and like have it really entertaining rather than going for the usual, oh, they're in high school, they like each other, sort of, there's a few misunderstandings, ooh, there's a console.
There is actually, you know, a show that I watched that was good and wasn't set in a high school, thank God. It did involve school and there were elements of romance, but you know that the main character, Inaba, and his best friend are going to get shipped, or have probably already been shipped. But Elegant Yokai Apartment Life is one of my
picks. I didn't watch it. It's caught me attention because I love anything yokai related, anything supernatural.
Yeah, there's a lot of darkness in that series that belies just how good the series is. And
that's good because Yokai Watch absolutely ruined Yokai for people.
This is more traditional Yokai, right? Good. And I think this is a great series. You know, it's not been doing well in terms of ratings because you've got a bunch of kids watching it going, oh, I don't like it. When's the explosions going to start? How come there's no boobies or, you know, panty shots or anything like that or explosions? Why is there no fighting? Why is there no action? Because it's not that type of show. They seem to forget that drama is a thing. So, yeah. Elegant Yokai Apartment Life. Easily one of my picks of the season. It's got a lot going for it. It's charming. It's sweet. It's funny. It's moving. It's got some action. It does deal a lot with the more traditional side of Yokai. It's got some amazing characters, most of whom are Yokai. Especially the cook for the apartment who is just a pair of female hands, and you can tell what mood she's in by what nail polish she's wearing.
Cool, actually. I like the old yokais. Like, there's because I did like a study on them, and there was one that comes and he licks all the grime out of your bathroom.
Yeah,
he crawls your walls and licks all the dirt off. I mean, it's like, yeah, he haunted, but it saves money on cleaning.
Yes, it does. It's like the OCD poltergeist, isn't it?
Well, we've got I've got two for the for my pick of the season. First one is Restaurant to Another World.
Yeah.
I mean, we've touched on this in previous. I mean, it is food porn at its purest.
Well, we've talked about it plenty. I don't think we need to mention it again. I think
it's continued to make me hungry week after week, and you know, watch it.
Yeah. The episode we just released was all about food, and Restaurant to Another World was mentioned a lot in that.
So, you know, if you want to hear our opinions on that, like, listen to that. And I think the big one, Made in Abyss.
That's probably anime of the year, I'd say. It's
definitely that kind of material because...
Well, it's not really got much competition at the moment, as far as I'm concerned.
It takes a lot. It's a very complex one, but it's two kids go into a hall. that's the simplistic two kids go spelunking, and but so much more than that.
Oh yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
You have the history of that world. You have the culture that's developed because of this giant pit that you can't reach the bottom of. Which it's basically like descending down the levels of a dungeon, except it's just this giant pit, and there's all sorts of dangers and monsters, and their entire culture has evolved around this pit. And so kids are trained from a very young age to basically descend and try and find treasures in this pit and make a name for themselves, you know. And
that's their way of life, and collect relics. And the thing is, there's a lot of orphans and there's a lot of people who were killed in this pit, but it's humanity's curiosity.
Yeah.
It's that thing like, oh, there's a great big hole, and there's always that one bloke who's like, I'm going to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
And it's simplistic curiosity, and there's excuse the pun, but it's fantastic on so many different levels, and because there's this whole curse around the pit as well, which gets touched upon, because they say if you descend the first level, when you ascend back up from the pit, you suffer like nausea and sickness. You go, and every level you go down, you're afflicted with like a new kind of curse. I think like the fourth one is if you ascend in the fourth floor, they're bleeding from every orifice, and they actually show that as well.
Mm.
And the thing is that it's centered around two characters. I think the lass is like 8 year old, and the kind of robot boy is also like of a similar age, but obviously he's being mechanically enhanced. And for these two kids at that age to go exploring in such a harsh terrain.
Yeah.
And I mean, the things that happen to them are graphic as well.
When she finds the robot boy, the first thing that happens is she's getting chased by that big mouth, snake mouth thing.
Yeah. And he manages to save her, but she was done for then. That was it. That was protagonist dead in the first episode. So, you know, why continue? But then you find more about, like, there's a lot of layers to the story, and you find like the different ranks of explorer. Like, you've got the red whistles, blue whistle, moon whistle, black whistle, and white whistle, which is obviously the top dogs. And you find out that her mother was a white whistle, and that then you find out she was born in the pit, and you find her backstory of like how she was stillborn, and they put her in this kind of one of the relics or something, and she came alive inside the relic. And that was her mother and her friend, who were both white whistles, carrying her back up to the surface. And when they released her alive, she tried to crawl back into the pit.
Wow.
So there's that kind of like proper curiosity. It's like, that's probably why it's like made in Abyss, because both of these kids were actually made in the Abyss.
Yeah.
But if you're a listener, definitely watch it if you haven't. It's on Amazon Prime or other sites if you don't want to give Amazon, who don't pay their taxes, your money.
Yes. But yeah. So, any for you, Mark, that stood out?
Again, I'm going to go back to Amazon Prime, and I'm going to say, well, what has probably been my anime of the year, Recreators.
Oh, yeah, you've been singing the praises of this for a while.
Yeah, this is essentially, well, I would say more like stuff like the Fate series, where it's a bunch of characters taken from a bunch of different worlds. Obviously, in this case, it's all different various fictions, like obviously we've got the mech character, we've got the JoJo like character, we've got the best friend character, we've got the erotica girl character, and these are all dragged from the relative series and put into the real world, and they come face to face with their creators, and of course it all ends up being a big massive fight and stuff like that, but they do touch on a lot of stuff of what is a character, and when does a character stop just being a character? Because all of these characters who are coming from these other series, they are real, and the creators have to move from treating them as characters to treating them as humans or as real people. And it is actually quite interesting the way they kind of do it. There's like the whole warrior princess who rides a flying horse, kind of like your Saber character, who's kind of fighting a war and stuff like that, and she comes to her creator and she goes, well, why have you done that? You're a horrible person, you're a horrible like god. And he's just like, he just responds with like, well, you're not even a person to us, all you are is just a way for me to make money.
Yeah.
And obviously over the series he obviously changes and becomes a better person, and it's all about people. It's all about the characters, really, and how people portray the characters. I mean, towards the end, they have this huge fight where they kind of have the fans, depend on how the fans react to characters and stuff like that. The characters have power ups, or they get more weaker if the fans don't agree with the way the characters are turning. And it was one of the very few series, as for me, especially this year, where I've actually been genuinely excited to watch the next episode.
All right, excellent.
So, yeah, I would definitely recommend, especially if you like the Fate series. It's Fate done better than Fate at the moment, it seems.
Well, I don't know, because Fate Apocrypha was one of the ones from the summer season as well. It was trying to do Fate in a different way. And I don't know, it works for the most part, and it's actually quite enjoyable for the most part, but I haven't finished watching it. I got about halfway through. So, yeah.
I haven't even started watching. Unfortunately, the Fate Apocrypha is one of those ones where Netflix have picked them up, and I think they're holding tight onto that until Christmas.
Yeah, I know. Well, when I say halfway through, it's a 25-episode series. So I've watched like 6 episodes. It was good for those 6 episodes. So one that I'm fully up to date with, though. Magical Circle, Mahoujin Guru Guru.
Oh, yeah, this is the one. I've watched the first episode and I've really enjoyed it.
It's been delightful nonsense all the way through.
I feel like this is the one that I know that there's been other bigger series, but I feel like that was the series that probably should have been the one that should have been getting the bigger push.
Yeah, but the thing is, because it's such an old title now, a lot of people are looking at it. I mean, it's like Hunter x Hunter, right?
Yeah.
Loads of people like Hunter x Hunter, but because it was such an old title, when they did the remake, you had all of the fans of Hunter x Hunter watching it first, and then everybody else jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I think is happening with Mahajin Guruguru. You've got a lot of the original fans of Magical Circle jumping on this straight away and really enjoying it. And slowly over time, you'll get other people watching it going, ooh, actually, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving from something really good to something else that was actually pretty damn amazing. Now, we mentioned this before. So we got sent to us, this is getting released from Studio Canal, we got sent to us the Red Turtle, which is a French-Japanese co-production directed by Michael Dudok-DeWitt, and it's also produced by Toshio Suzuki, and it's a co-production between Wild Bunch and Studio Ghibli. Now, the involvement in Studio Ghibli, that made all sorts of headlines. Loads of people were looking at this going, wow, what is this? What is this movie? What is it about? What's the story? And having watched it, I can tell you it is glorious, but also a little bit confusing, right? The Red Turtle tells the story of an unnamed guy who is marooned on a desert island. It opens with a storm and the guy looks like he's drowning. He grabs onto a boat, but then the wave crashes down and he wakes up on a deserted island. And he, you know, it's got a hill in the middle, a bare hill in the middle, and it's got like bamboo groves and stuff like that. But he doesn't know what to do. And he is on this island and on this island and on this island. And time travels on and he is very, very confused and he starts getting depressed. He eventually decides, I'm going to make a raft. I'm going to make a break for it. I'm going to try and get off this island. So he makes a raft and he pushes it out to sea. And he gets a certain way out, but then there's a thump on the bottom of the raft, and then something else thumps, and he falls in the water. He's looking around, he can't see anything, so he swims back to shore, and he's kind of angry, makes a second raft, and tries to go out again. But something hits from the bottom, from under the water, and his raft falls apart, and he still doesn't know what it is, right? Eventually, he discovers that what has been stopping him leaving is this red turtle, and he... You know, his raft is destroyed, he gets back to the shore, and he sees the turtle crawling up the beach, and he's so angry, you know, he's so angry, he runs down the hill, clubs the turtle over the head, then flips it over, and the turtle is left there, and he's just going on with his thing, and he leaves the turtle just in the sun, right, to die.
It's rather cruel.
Yeah, it is quite cruel, and this is the thing, I'm not going to go into any more of the story, but what happens after that is kind of sweet and disturbing, and you're not sure if it's a hallucination or not. You're not sure if it's a hallucination caused by loneliness or insanity or guilt, or whether it is an actual thing that happens. This is where reality basically shifts. It takes a turn to the left. So everything up to the turtle is fine. And after that, it takes on this really strange, surreal, almost magical feel, because after that is a story about family and a story about acceptance of your place in the world.
Okay.
And the great thing about this is there is almost no dialogue at all. You have the characters sometimes going, oi, and rah, and making noises like that, but that's it. There's no dialogue in this. And it doesn't play out like your typical silent movie where they hold up a piece of cardboard with some writing on it telling you what's going on. You basically have to infer certain things based on what you're seeing on screen. The film does actually make you work, make you think. And I think it's a great piece of animation. I think it's a great piece of animated cinema because it does do that. It does push you. Michael Dudok-DeWitt has come up with a singular piece of animation. This is one of those pieces that I would put right up there with some of the most thought-provoking animation. It's not great in terms of its story. The story is very simple. But the messages it has are very, very complex. Or can be very simple depending on how your brain works, you can see, you might see things in a very, very simple way and just get the messages straight off. Or you might have to, you know, if you're like me, you might have to think about them a little bit. That doesn't mean to say that you're stupid, right? It just means that your thought processes are a bit more convoluted. That's all. It's really well animated. And the thing is, you know, Tucky, you and I mentioned this before.
Yep.
When we talked about if the French were adapting certain things to anime or to animation, what would the quality be like? And you can
tell. The heist.
Yeah, you can tell. This has superb animation. It has a great art style. I love the style of the characters because the style of the characters is very much the kind of, you know, French comics, the European comics.
Yeah.
It's very much kind of in the Tintin style, but the way they're animated is so good, especially when they're underwater. The underwater animation is superb, right? It's so fluid. It's so elegant. It's a bit like a dance underwater when they're swimming. And, it's really, really good. I mean, it's no secret because it's in the trailer that, the guy meets a red-headed woman. And they have a son, right? That's no secret. That's in the trailer for this. And then that's all I'm going to say on that. That's where the part about family comes along.
So that's where it gets weird, because if I'm thinking right, then the red turtle and red-haired woman.
I'm not saying a word. You'll have to find out on your own. But I will say this. If you are a fan of Ghibli, then you should watch this. Because Ghibli does have an involvement, and it shows that Ghibli have been involved. I think Isao Takahata had a really big part to play in this. I'll tell you some of the awards it won. It was nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards 2017. It won the Best Animated Feature at the Annie Awards, Best Animated Feature Independent. It won the special prize at the Cannes Film Festival in 2016 and was nominated for a couple of others. It was nominated for the Best Animated Film at the Chicago Film Critics Awards, the Best Animated Feature at the Critics' Choice Awards. It was the runner-up Best Animated Film at the LA Film Critics Association. It was nominated for the Magritte Award for Best Foreign Film in Co-Production and Best Sound. It was nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Online Film Critics Association. It won the San Francisco Film Critics Circle's Best Animated Feature, nominated for Satellite Awards, and also runner-up at the Toronto Film Critics Association. It's that good.
So we'll expect to see it at the Oscars.
No, it's already been nominated, hasn't it? It got nominated.
Oh, so it's been nominated.
Yeah, the date of the ceremony was earlier this year.
That's so good.
So yeah, it was one of the ones that was nominated earlier this year. It's currently on Rotten Tomatoes. It is tracking at 94% on the tomato meter with an audience score of 80%.
So pretty good then.
Yeah, pretty damn good. It's very good. It's very good. And moving from very good to very bad. It's so bad, no, it turned me fully Indian.
Oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear.
Look, it's got Jaden Smith in.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Never mind. Well, it's got Susan Sarandon and Jude Law and Stephen Fry and all sorts of other. It's got
Steve Buscemi. And it's still garbage.
It's got Steve Buscemi in. I mean, it's literally set up so that it can't fail. And then they add Jaden Smith.
That's even with the rest of them. It's. I don't know. I just know there's somebody in a boardroom somewhere that deserves to die for the decisions they made.
Yeah.
This series is what sadness looks like.
In case anyone is wondering, basically Netflix decided that it was time for them to put on their anime big boy pants, but they unfortunately had a bit of an accident and couldn't clean up after themselves. So,
they absolutely shit the bed. And this is the thing. First off, they went to a musician. They went to, what's his name? Ezra Koenig.
And who is he the lead singer of?
Vampire Knight or something like that. It's like, you know what? I'll go to the Chuckle Brothers for financial advice. It's like that. It's absolutely garbage that you would turn around and you think, you know who would make a great anime? The lead singer of some band.
Oh, Vampire Weekend, like, yeah. But this is the thing. Ezra Koenig is part of the rock band Vampire Weekend. And I would honestly say, if your band is called Vampire Weekend, maybe you should stick to music as your career.
I thought it was Vampire Nights. I don't give a toss about his music career. He's never shown up on my radar. It's like, well, if it's stupid, it's like, and Netflix kind of got into Nicki Minaj and got, hey, you know, we've got like 8 episodes. Can you do a horror anime for us?
I think Vampire Weekend turned up on Jules Holland one time. I remember the name, I think, from Jules Holland. But aside from that, never heard of them. And all I can say is, this is kind of the sucker punch of anime. I want to know when Ezra Koenig had the idea for Neo Yorkio, because this literally, the story is plotted as though it was written by a 13-year-old and it's a fan fiction.
That's insulting all 13-year-olds who write fanfic.
I'll have you know, Sucker Punch was a 13-year-old fan fiction and that got a movie. Yeah,
Who's giving money to them?
No.
Netflix?
Yeah, but the worst part is Sucker Punch is Zack Snyder's 13-year-old fan fiction. He actually had the idea when he was 13. And you look at Sucker Punch and you go, we know exactly what you were thinking about when you were 13, Zach.
Anyway, so I couldn't get my head around this, right? I saw the advert. It was highly stylized. It was more like a perfume ad than an ad for an anime. And we saw all of the cliches, the mecha butler, you know, the post-apocalyptic city, which has been built on top of like its remains and whatnot. And like stupid pink hair, which had no reason, but it's like, ooh, look, that's good stylish. And then they start reeling off like the A-list celebrities.
Yeah. And the thing and is,
you saw in the comments, like, Susan Sarandon doesn't need this paycheck. Jude Law doesn't need to be doing this crap.
Stephen Fry? Richard Ayoade? No, seriously. Richard Ayoade, Stephen Fry, Jason Schwartzman, John DiMaggio, Peter Serafinovich, Steve Buscemi.
Absolutely. It's like, he's just desperate. Hey, you know, Richard Ayoade, is the Crystal Maze not paying you enough?
Exactly. Isn't he gadgeting as well?
Do you know what the thing is about it? Obviously, we're going to discuss like what they've been paid and whatnot. But they all sound so bored in this series.
It's because Jaden Smith himself is boring and sounds bored. Now, I saw somebody on YouTube trying to justify Neo Yorkio, saying, Neo Yorkio, it's not a parody of anything other than Jaden Smith's own life, because he lives on Twitter and he says these things and they're not meant to be taken seriously. He's satirizing his own life because obviously he's not like that, but people take it seriously. So he's made this show called Neo Yorkio and it's satirizing his satire. So he's basically playing it straight. And I'm thinking, how much bullshit can you come out with in 5 minutes?
Yeah, man. So it's Jaden Smith. He's tacking the piss out of Jaden Smith because he's get meta like that. He's terrible. He's absolutely terrible. And the show is terrible. And they should feel bad about it because I feel bad about watching it. And I demand remittance for this.
You want your time
back? I'm not paying £5 a month for this crap.
You want your time back?
Castlevania was fantastic.
You're paying like £8 now.
I'm still coming out, £5 coming out of my bank, but that's another story.
Anyway.
I might be getting a discount in Netflix.
Let's just do the story, you know? And I don't know why I'm doing jazz hands, right? The story is apparently modern-day alternate timeline New York, where magicians save the city from ruin by demons in the 19th century, gaining a place in the upper echelons of society and becoming known as magistocrats.
Terrible fusion of words there.
Yeah. The series resolves around Kaz Khan, because they couldn't think of a better name than Kaz Khan.
Khan! Oh,
typical alliteration for lazy people.
Yeah. A vain and wealthy magistocrat and his mecha butler Charles, who's played by Jude Law, as he balances a vapid and decadent life as a fashionista in the city with his demon-hunting duties managed by his stern aunt Agatha, who's played by Susan Sarandon. Kaz has taken to self-pity and melancholy after his recent breakup with investment banker Kathy and only wishes to live a life of luxury with his socialite friend Lexi, played by the Kid Mero, and Gottlieb, played by Desus Nice. His rival is Arcangelo, obviously, play on Archangel, who's played by Jason Schwartzman, an old money scion who belittles Khan's neo-riche status, and the two are often in competition for the top spot on the bachelor's list. a gigantic public billboard of Neo Yokio's most eligible bachelors. Now, do you know how long the whole exorcism thing lasts?
2 episodes.
Well, no, it's like barely one. It's like
yeah,
one cardigan or something's possessed and that's it, or the Damien Hirst bejeweled skull, because culture reference, because they say Ralph Lauren a bit as well.
Oh, God, yeah. And I'm not even... And, we'll get back to the philosophical references in a bit, okay? But yeah, it lasts about an episode, or just under an episode, and then it's thrown away in favour of, oh, look at me, I'm going to be the most eligible bachelor of all in New York, yo.
And they've got the thing, the Times Square, like, advertising boards is all of a sudden a scoreboard for who's the most eligible bachelor in the city.
Yeah.
It's like, who scores it and who gives a shit? And then they try and do this whole thing with the lass who was possessed.
Yeah.
To be like, oh no, you're all commercial. You're all too corporate and that. Your lives are meaningless. I'm outside of that, so I'm better.
Yep.
And then he's like, oh, well, you're not deserving of this gippy Toblerone I've got.
Yeah.
Not a euphemism. It is a literal Toblerone.
It is a literal Toblerone, so product placement.
The Toblerone is the only salvageable thing.
Yeah.
Well, I say that. Richard Ayoade does many characters and has the most pointless lines, but he, like, kind of makes it. Like, the kiss her, you magical...
Yeah.
That's the only line I can remember. But you know it's him, and it's him throughout, and I can't get, like... If you've ever seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place,
yes,
his character in that, where it's just pure nonsensical comedy, I imagine that's that character that's speaking and not actually like Crystal Mears, IT Crowd kind of guy.
See, I can't take Garth Marenghi seriously because his surname sounds... His surname sounds so much like meringue, and so I don't take him seriously. I just, whenever I hear his name, I think, tasty. I'll have a bit of that merengue, please.
Isn't merengue a dance?
Lemon merengue pie. Yes, merengue is a dance as well.
But back to the anime and off desserts and giant Toblerones. By the way, if you want a 4-foot Toblerone, £75 on the Cadbury's website, just if you want a cosplay prop.
Hang on. Cadbury's? Why Cadbury's?
Yeah.
I
don't know. It's just the Cadbury's website.
No, I thought Toblerone belonged to like Nestle or someone like that.
No, it's on the Cadbury's website. Because I was actually looking for one, because it's like we're trying to get more followers for the Sunnygon thing. So it's like, oh, we'll give away a cosplay prop. I don't know. I'll give away a 4-foot Toblerone and everyone will be in on the joke. And then it came up like £75. Like, it's a bit out of our advertising budget. I think I'll leave it.
Yeah, so Amazon's got one. £75, 4.5 kilograms.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Toblerone is owned by US confectionery company Mondelez International Incorporated. It was formerly Kraft Foods.
Kraft bought Cadbury's, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they did, didn't they? Okay, yeah, that explains why it's on the Cadbury's website.
The question is,
go on.
Is this a classic-style Toblerone, or is it the new-style Toblerone, where you don't get quite as much in?
I don't know. I don't care. if it's got wider valleys than it has peaks, who gives a toss?
Yeah, okay.
Sticking on with it, there's so much that you can say is wrong with the show. Like, from the character names, before I said Kaz Khan, or the pop star idol Sailor Pellegrino,
yeah,
who's from North Carolina.
Yeah, but Sailor Pellegrino, do you know that San Pellegrino is, you know, they have, like, the tastiest water, apparently, and they also have that catalog that tells you the finest places to eat in the world.
Yeah. Bugger that, give us a Michelin star guide. I'm that high taste.
Yes. The thing that really got me about this was the art style and the animation. I mean, you had Production IG and Studio Dean working on this, and it literally looks and is animated as though the guys over at Studio Dean and Production IG took one look at the script and said, you what? You want us to animate this shit? You seriously expect us to put some serious man hours into this crap? The hell? Where are those internship boys? Where are the apprentices? Get them on this.
Yeah, it looked really cheaply done. It's like, I just can't. It was just so bad. I mean, there was that scene where he's talking to that old guy outside the grave.
Yeah.
And the talking is like the character models look completely off skewered, and like there wasn't even a background.
Well, the thing is, the mouth movements didn't actually match what they were saying. You're like, hang on, you're making this for English dialogue. So why don't they match? Have you literally gone for like Japanese dialogue in an English series?
It wouldn't surprise us if they did.
I can't help but feel that the whole idea of this series is that it's supposed to be bad. It's supposed to be all of the all of the bad stuff you used to take the mick out of. You remember like when WWF used to have those Japanese wrestlers and they used to badly dub them.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
It feels like that.
Here's the thing, Mark, right? What they've tried to do, and I actually think they have purposely tried to make this bad, but what they've tried to do is go, it's so bad, it's good. What they've failed to realise is that if you are purposefully trying to make something bad so that people would think it's so bad, it's good, you're just going to end up with something atrociously bad and demeaning to everybody involved. Because you should never try and make something purposefully bad. You should try and make it just for the hell of it, and then if it turns out to be so bad it's good, then that's a bonus, right?
Yeah.
There's so many movies I could name that were just made because, well, for the hell of it, and they turned out to be so bad that they're amazing. Zorro the Gay Blade, for example, which is a fantastic film, and if you get a chance to watch it, I guarantee you the cast of peasants will not put you off. You'll never look at Zorro the same way again.
Oh, I'm just reading something on Facebook. Someone's literally just posted on Facebook going, it's not that bad of a series. And I was like,
reply to them, Mark, that yes, it is that bad of a series, and we can prove it. We've done scientific study on this.
Or just tell them to go boil their head.
Seriously, though, they shouldn't do stuff like that. Shouldn't try and make something purposefully bad. Monty Python is another great example. They never tried to do something that was purposefully bad. Because none of the movies really are great movies. They're memorable movies.
It was just them dicking about and it somehow all fell into place.
Exactly. They were memorable movies and they're so much fun to watch and they're eminently quotable. Like, Back to the Future isn't a great movie, is it? No one's going to sit there and say Back to the Future is an amazingly well put together film. Look at that. It's just sounds.
Tell me father-in-law that.
Yeah. No. The acting is fantastic, I tell you. The dialogue, it's so well structured.
The props are top mechanical.
Oh no, Marty. It's the Libyans. It's Oscar winning, I tell you.
Current political events as well.
I mean, it's
where all nuclear materials go down in a car park.
Yeah. And look at Wayne's World. Wayne's World blatantly took the piss out of that whole idea of Oscar winning material with the Oscar clip, and it actually says Oscar clip underneath it. And I never learned to read. So, yeah, you can do something was just them dicking about, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this is, I don't think they was dicking about, I think they were serious. No, and the thing is, I mean, this is stepping Jaden Smith in as the lead, the guy who like tweets things like, if a bookstore never runs out of a certain book, does that mean that nobody reads it or everybody reads it?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the thing that really made me want to find Ezra Koenig and Jaden Smith and how should I say this
bluntly and as upfront as possible,
basically. Put them on a rocket and launch them towards the sun. They want to be stars. They can hang out with the biggest one in the solar system.
Yay.
They might not like it the closer they get, but hey, you want to be up there with the rest of the stars? Fine by me. I'll help you. The crap and very, very crass attempts at shoehorning philosophy and a little bit of history into the series by just quoting certain things.
Well, the high society, they try and like, cram in it as well.
Yeah.
Like I say, the reference to Damien Hirst's like diamond encrusted skull and like try to use that as a prop, or like I say, the core, like, oh, Ralph Lauren, they make their own martini cocktail out of like mozzarella, basil, and some tomato juice. So you got a raw pizza in a martini glass. Well done, yous.
See, here's the thing, right? And I'm not surprised that Jaden Smith and Ezra Koenig and the rest of them, Stephen Fry, probably could have advised them on this, because Stephen Fry knows this as well as a lot of people. Anybody who's had dealings with people who are old school rich or even new school rich, they don't behave in general the way that Jaden Smith's character behaves in this. Basically, if you're rich, generally you're told don't brag about it, at least if you're rich and European, that is. If you're rich and American, I don't care.
Have a little class, because there are still people underneath you who will rob the crap out of you if you brag, if you're boastful. Well, ask any lottery winner who went large.
All I can say is, given the problems that are in the world right now, especially things like hurricanes, earthquakes, massacres in various countries, there's still war in Syria and Afghanistan, and Iraq, and there's hundreds of thousands of refugees. So then you basically go and do a series where you play an overprivileged brat whose only goal in life is to be the most eligible bachelor in your fictional city. And you try and...
You can kind of see why North Korea is a bit pissed at them if they're pulling out crap like that.
No, I'm sorry, but North
Korea... I'm not saying Jane Smith's the reason why we're on the brink of nuclear war, but Jane Smith's kind of the reason that we're on the brink of nuclear war.
Do you think that's the case? Do you think Kim Jong-un looked at this and he's a closet anime fan? He's like,
I think he just went out for a walk down of East Street and whatnot after curfew, had his binoculars out, as he does. He's looked in, they're watching Netflix, and they're watching this Neo Yorko. He's seen it, he's went, "Ray Trump, you're going to get it now."
Either that, or his mate Rodman's come over from America and said, "Oh, I've got the latest hit anime from like all over the place." So they're sitting down to watch it. He's like, "What is this, New York, your Dennis?"
You just slap that bad boy on. Let's have 10, like, few episodes of crap.
And now, oh god, no, because that means Dennis Rodman is somewhere in America hunting down Jaden Smith.
Dennis Rodman, bounty hunter.
Yes,
they just didn't get paid as much as they do these days.
Oh, so anyway, we are at the end of the show. So we're going to leave you for this week. We'll be back next week with more anime, more animation, more of everything. And we'll be leaving the memories of Neo Yorkio behind. Hopefully Jaden won't get involved with any more anime. Well, we can only hope.
He's all right to do Toblerone adverts now. He's chipper for that, but...
He's set for life.
I think Susan Sarandon's gone down. Stephen Fry's in a cave somewhere crying his eyes out.
No, he's not. They're not.
Jude Law's chef gone down.
No, they're fine. They're all fine. Jaden's the one who needed them to give him a leg up, so he called his dad to call in a bunch of favours. That's why I reckon they're all there, because his dad called in a bunch of favours.
We may never know.
So anyway,
do you really care?
Yeah, I know. Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. All our shows are available on Audio Boom, iTunes, or the podcast provider of your choice. We are also on Patreon, so if you're a regular listener, then please show your support. It'll help us buy extra equipment and much-needed upgrades to various things that we have, which will help us cover more things and produce better quality shows for you to listen with your ear holes. We can be found on Facebook and Twitter, or you can contact us direct, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Until next time then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been very angry at Netflix.
And also very tucky.
Still am.
Yes. He's tucky, by the way.
Like no one knows. Oh, I wonder who he is. He sounds a bit Geordie. Oh, it's tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Insert random quote here.
I was going to say, I've got no funny. I have vented so much. I've vented so much, my hair's pink and I'm tweeting crap.